Welcome to the Fisheries Podcast. In this fourth episode, I sit down with Dr. Chris Vandergoot, and we discuss his work with the Great Lakes Acoustic Telemetry Observation System. Thank you for joining me. I am Nick Kramer, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Today we are joined by another guest, Dr. Chris Vandergoot. Chris currently serves as a research fish biologist at the U.S. Geological Survey's Lake Erie Biological Station, located in Sandusky, Ohio. Prior to that, he served as a supervisor of fish biology for 3 years at the Sandusky Fisheries Research Station and a fisheries biologist for 11 years on Lake Erie with the Ohio Department of Natural Resource Division of Wildlife. As a fisheries researcher and biologist, he is interested in understanding and quantifying the population dynamics of native Great Lakes fishes, particularly Lake Erie pursids. He primarily focuses on conducting field-based studies which describe the ecological and demographic processes of wild fish populations for stock assessment modeling purposes. Specific areas of interest include examining stock discreteness, rates of iteroparity, spawning site fidelity, spawning phenology, migratory behavior, and estimating mortality rates. He has also conducted numerous studies evaluating the efficiency and performance of fishery-independent sampling gears and methodologies. Chris has been author or co-author on close to 40 publications in scientific journals covering a variety of topics, and today he will be filling us in on fish movement in the Great Lakes. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Nick, thanks for having me on. I appreciate reaching out to be able to explain a little bit about some of the research I've been involved with other colleagues in the Great Lakes Basin with acoustic telemetry. So thanks.
Oh, no problem. The whole point of the podcast is to share amazing stories, and I'm sure we'll get some insight into an amazing project here today.
I'm looking forward to it.
We'll just jump right into the tough questions. You've been in Sandusky for a few years now. How many roller coasters have you ridden at Cedar Point?
Well, I guess when I was younger and we were little kids, we went there a lot more frequently than we do now. It's a funny thing what age does to the equilibrium of a human's body. The only roller coasters I ride these days are basically out on our research vessel when we go out on the lake for sampling.
You are part of the Great Lakes Acoustic Telemetry Observation System, or GLATOS, which is a bi-national network consisting of about 250 members from 66 different organizations that uses acoustic telemetry to understand fish behavior and provide information useful in decision-making. If you could you talk a little bit about why GLATOS was created and why studying fish movement is important?
Well, interestingly, researchers have been studying fish movements on Lake Erie since like the early 1950s. But what they realized was they needed a better method for tracking these fish over the large geographic expanse. You know, when you do a small tracking study, you know, in a small area of one of these Great Lakes, it's possible to do it with radio telemetry, you know, in one of the bays or one of the rivers. But once these fish get out into the main lake basin, it's very hard to keep track of them. For many years, we used a conventional tagging with jaw tags or Floyd tags to mark fish and then look at, you know, where they were tagged and then subsequently where they were recaptured. But one of the drawbacks of those studies were that it was dependent, first of all, where the fisheries were operating, because if fish were moving to areas where there were no fisheries, we had no sense of that. And the other drawback to that is after you released the fish, you really had no idea what it did between times A and B, from the time of release to the time of capture. So some tags, you know, we'd get back the next day that were tagged. So you have a general idea of where the fish had moved between those two time periods. But other time periods, other fish, you know, there'd be 10 or 15 years before you get a recapture back. So you had no idea what these fish were doing over that, you know, that long period of time. So telemetry and the acoustic telemetry network we set up and that I'm involved with was really, the purpose was to provide managers and decision makers with information that previously they were unable to attain. So basically, GLATOS was set up as a methodology or technique for providing managers with information on fish movements and population dynamic parameters that were unattainable with the technology at the time.
The program began in 2010. How many fish has the program tracked since then?
I don't know the last time we put out a summary of the, you know, the number of fish tagged and the number of detections. But I know on Lake Erie, I've been associated with releasing approximately 1,000 walleye. I've got another 200 or 300 whitefish that were tagged, another 150 lake trout that were tagged, bunch of grass carp, and then there are probably just as many sea lamprey, if not more, that have been tagged through the GLaDOS network in the upper lakes with acoustic transmitter. So, you know, ballpark, we're probably looking at somewhere around 10,000 fish that have been tagged with these acoustic transmitters for all those projects that you listed off earlier in the segment.
The GLaDOS Twitter account, GLaDOS_fish, they actually tweeted out a summary on August 3rd. And I had that written down in case you didn't know. And you were pretty close. They had 10,643 fish released.
Wow. That was, I got to say, that was a swag guess for sure.
There's 41 different species of fish released and 68 different projects. Can you just run through some of those projects, some of the ones you've been on and some of the other ones you find interesting?
If you get a chance to go look at the website, it's really quite interesting. The homepage, of course, gives a background on kind of like the purpose of GLaDOS and a little bit of the background information. But there's a project page. And if you click on one of those, you'll see all the different projects that are listed under each of the different lakes or on the interconnected waters. So you have like the Huron-Erie Corridor and the St. Mary's River. So you got a bunch of projects listed underneath all those different areas. And so basically, I would say that the two main areas are projects that look at native species and then invasive species. In the invasive species category, you have things like grass carp and sea lamprey. And then native species, you have things like lake trout, lake whitefish, walleye, and lake sturgeon. So initially, the project that was set up in 2010, there were four projects: sea lamprey, lake trout, lake sturgeon, and walleye. And the purpose of those first four projects were really to demonstrate what type of information could be garnered using an acoustic telemetry approach. This is really novel technology to the area in that nobody had really conducted telemetry study in the Great Lakes Basin of this degree. So really, those first four projects were set up as kind of like demonstration projects. And so you had one with walleye that we know that they move quite a bit. And so that project was designed to show technology can be used to look at these fish movements over large areas. The lake sturgeon, again, that they were more homebodies and that they stayed in the water body where they were tagged. Again, another different scale, but then those tags are like meant to last 10 years long. So tracking long-lived species. The lake trout study was actually quite interesting because it was trying to compare the spawning behaviors with fine scale movements between hatchery and wild produced fish. So kind of looking at if wild fish have different spawning behaviors and timing than hatchery reared fish. And this was all for the purpose of trying to restore native spawning stocks of lake trout in the Great Lakes Basin. Anybody who's familiar even remotely with the Great Lakes realizes that sea lamprey is a major problem, and that millions of dollars are annually spent on sea lamprey control. So the purpose of the sea lamprey project was to kind of demonstrate the utility of telemetry to help researchers and biologists get an idea of what their movement and behaviors are like to inform control efforts. So that's really a broad stroke of kind of the diversity of projects, but it kind of really set the stage for why GLaDOS was initiated and kind of the information that's been coming out of it today.
Those are all real interesting projects, and I'm sure if anyone else wants to know about the other ones, they could go to the website, GLaDOS, GLaDOS.GLOS.US. So most people have probably seen researchers putting GPS collars on mammals on a television program, or attach the screw-on GPS tags to shark fins during Discovery Channel Shark Week. But you aren't putting a collar on a fish or screwing GPS tags. It won't be that effective on our ray-finned fishes of the Great Lakes. So how are your tags different?
Our tags, they're different than the ones that you see on the Discovery Channel with sharks. And the thing I like to kind of try to relate to people is that the way that this telemetry system works is very much like the toll system, you know, on some of the interstates here in America. You know, we have the Easy Pass system, where you buy a little puck for your car, and then as you travel around and you go through different toll booths, you know, you don't have to stop and pay the toll. You can just kind of zoom right through, and it records when you were there and then how much you're going to owe. with acoustic telemetry, it's very much the same thing. What we do is that puck actually becomes the fish, right? That's the transmitter. You're a tagged fish, in essence, on the freeway. So we buy these transmitters, and they range in size from like the size of a Tic Tac all the way up to about a AA battery. We put these in fish. We surgically implant them, and then we release them for a particular project. And then we have this array of receivers that we deploy. So there are some projects that are really focused on, you know, the movements of fish in a river. So there'll be a string of receivers going up and down the river system. Some of the projects I've been involved with are actually more concerned or more interested in looking at what these fish are doing out in the lake. And so we have a bunch of receivers deployed throughout Lake Erie. And initially, we started out with just deploying a string of receivers across the Western Basin because we want to know when fish left and entered the Western Basin of Lake Erie. Through time, we've actually redeployed our receivers, and right now, all of Lake Erie is gridded off. So every 15 kilometers, there's actually a receiver underwater sitting there passively listening for fish to swim by. So the beauty of this technology is that whether I've tagged a juvenile lake sturgeon or a cisco or a walleye or a lake sturgeon, as long as that fish has a transmitter that's operating on the same frequency of our receiver, and right now the majority of our receivers are 69 kilohertz, that fish's information will be logged and stored on that receiver until we go out there, download the receiver, and then upload the information to our database.
So then how are the transmitters attached to the fish?
There's a lot of different ways you can actually attach a transmitter to a fish. Most of the studies, I believe, I don't know of any really, in the Great Lakes at least, that attach them externally. We actually rely on going out there, collecting the fish, whether it's in the spring or in the summer and the fall, anesthetizing them, conducting a surgical procedure where we open up the fish, we sterilize the transmitter, we place it into the coelom of the fish, we suture it back up, make sure the fish is going to recover, and then we release it back into the environment. In Lake Erie, we actually put another external tag on these fish, and we offer a reward for our transmitters because if that fish is harvested, we want to know that it's been harvested, and we want to get that transmitter back because we can reuse it in either another fish or for another project. So we actually mark them with an external tag to let people know that the fish has a transmitter because after, you know, a short period of time, the incision will heal up and people won't even know that a fish has the transmitter in it.
Henry Hershey, or at Spoonbill Hank on Twitter, asked, do you have any biotelemetry tags out there? What physiological aspects of fish movement are you interested in?
Yes, we actually do. What we did in combination to the standard transmitter that we've been putting on the fish to just determine, you know, their movement throughout the lake, on some fish, we attach what we call an eye button, which is actually a thermal logger. These thermal loggers are used in the fruit industry to track the temperature of, you know, containers when the fruit is being shipped around to make sure that the fruit doesn't go into high temperatures, you know, where it would spoil. Well, Dr. Stephen Cook at Carleton University kind of came up with this method or told us about this method where you can actually take one of those eye buttons, glue it on one of the ends of the transmitter, waterproof it, and then put it in the fish. And then because fish, of course, are cold-blooded and ectotherms, their body temperature is typically the same with some lag there of what the environment is. And so when we get that fish tag back, if somebody harvests that fish or we were to collect that fish again and we get that transmitter back, we can take that thermal button off and download the data. And then we have a complete thermal history for that fish, you know, for however long that logger is capable of logging the information. The company we work with, Vemco, also has another transmitter that is capable of recording things like acceleration or depth and temperature and whatnot. And so there are other tags that are used in the Great Lakes that record these other parameters so a biologist or a researcher can, you know, have a better idea of what these fish are doing in the environment.
So do you put any loggers like hobo data loggers onto your receiver arrays to get that same information where the fish aren't at?
Depending upon the application, yes. So some of the receivers actually have the capability of recording things like temperature, sound, tilt, and whatnot. That information, in addition to recording the presence of a transmitter, those receivers will actually log those, you know, at prescribed intervals while they're being deployed. Some of the other receivers don't have that capability. And in that case, if we need that information, we'll also, you know, deploy a typical hobo logger or, you know, other type of auxiliary logging device to give us an idea of, you know, what the conditions are at that area. One of the nice things, I guess, about working on the Great Lakes is that NOAA does quite a bit of weather forecasting. So we're actually able to get pretty robust estimates of, you know, temperature, oxygen concentrations from their models. And we're able to use that information as well to kind of relate fish movements to that type of information. So that's kind of like the wave of the future, I guess, or where a lot of these projects are going is taking, you know, the environmental data, whether it's the harmful algal blooms and how fish are responding to those, or prevailing weather conditions and relating it back to fish movement. You know, one of the cool things was with our lake trout project is, you know, in the eastern basin of Lake Erie, that's the only place where there's cold water and sufficient oxygen for lake trout to exist. So when you look at their distribution during the summer months, it's pretty isolated to the eastern basin. Well, as soon as the lake destratifies, these fish rush to the edges looking for spawning habitat. So that was really cool as you're sitting there looking at the data, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, these things made this pronounced movement near shore. Well, if you go back and take a look at the temperature data, you can see that the lake destratified, you know, very close to the time period that these fish started making that near shore movement.
The entire system, according to the last update, has about 1,300 receivers deployed at the moment. Do you guys do any active tracking as well as the passive tracking of the deployed receivers?
Yeah, so that's going to certainly be project specific. You know, one of the things I would do with my projects is after we would tag these fish, you know, we generally would tag them and release them, you know, near a receiver. But if I didn't have that luxury, I'd actually go out there and do some remote tracking just to get an idea of, you know, if those fish are, you know, dead at the bottom of the lake or if they had at least moved on. When you get into some of the more shallow water environments, I believe there are researchers doing some more active tracking. And it's really project specific because with acoustic telemetry, it's a little bit different than the radio telemetry that most people are familiar with, where it's harder to pinpoint exactly where that fish is. You usually have a radius of where that fish is, whether it be 100 meters, 200 meters, or 300 meters. But there are some ways of narrowing it down. But that is one of the differences between acoustic telemetry and radio telemetry. It's not as easy to pinpoint exactly where a fish is unless you're, you know, using what they call the VPS, the VEMCO positioning system, where you can actually estimate coordinate for fish as they're moving around on certain habitats if you have an area flooded with receivers. Basically, the way that works is if a fish is in an area with a bunch of receivers, you're able to triangulate a position and actually get individual coordinates of where that fish was while it was in that array of closely grouped receivers.
So while I was in Missouri, we did a little bit of telemetry work as well. I did some on paddlefish and some other students did some on lake sturgeon or American eels. And they had a pre-existing telemetry array already set up using VEMCO receivers as well. And they were located on like back of bridge pillars and some in the lock chambers. Some of the people smarter than me decided to put VR2s on special mounts on the front of these barges traveling up and down the river. Is there an option to gain information like that on the Great Lakes, or are the ships just too big?
There is an option for that. One of the reasons we haven't pursued that too intently is because, you know, like in Lake Erie, we have a lot more receivers. So it's in some respects simpler to just rely on our existing receiver networks. The other challenge with that is you're not quite sure where that fish is, you know, when you mount it on a boat, unless you have really good coordination of where the boat is at a specific period of time. And then the other piece of information you have to incorporate into that is how far is that receiver actually listening, because detection ranges can vary as the habitat changes and then as well as, you know, the underwater noises change as well. So we haven't gone that route yet. There's always the possibility to do that. One of the things that we've actually been kind of investigating, and just we haven't given it the whole old college try yet, but we're moving that way, is that using actually AUVs, autonomous underwater vehicles, to listen and to move around an area for fish. Some places out in the ocean actually use wave gliders, where they kind of ride on the ocean and they're propelled by the currents. Others use, you know, literally they look like submarines and they're powered by a propeller remotely. And so we've been doing a little bit of work with those AUVs. And I think that's probably the next frontier, if you would, in understanding, you know, where these fish are moving, because you've got a lot more freedom in some respects to send the AUV on specific missions of where to listen for these fish. So whether it be an algal bloom or, you know, some type of plume, you, on a day-to-day basis, you could actually deploy that AUV to listen in specific areas to see if any of your tag fish are there. So that's probably the next area that, you know, you'll see progress, at least in the Great Lake region, with respect to, you know, mounting receivers on moving vessels.
And would those be self-controlled? Like, would you have a joystick, or would they be set to go from point A to point B on their own?
I believe the way a lot of these work is that they put them on program missions, and there's always somebody there kind of monitoring the status of the mission. But I think it's more of they put in fixed GPS coordinates, and the vehicle kind of just transits in between those predetermined coordinates.
Like I mentioned earlier, there are some other telemetry projects going on out there. The Mississippi River, like I mentioned, as well as all those Asian carp researchers in Chicago and the Illinois River. Do any of your 10,000 fish you've ever tagged ever get picked up on those other arrays or vice versa?
Well, we're really hoping that they don't get picked up on any of the ones that the Asian carp researchers are working with in the Chicago area waterway, because that would mean that the barrier has been penetrated. Again, like the beauty of our system is that, you know, I've had fish that I've tagged in Lake Erie show up all the way up in northern Lake Michigan and Lake Huron. So that's really impressive. We've watched sturgeon that were tagged in the Detroit River, you know, migrate south through Lake Erie, basically do a loop around all of Lake Erie and then go back to where it was originally tagged. So the beauty is that of this system is that we can watch these fish move over these large geographic areas virtually seamlessly. And a researcher would know that. You know, I can only oversee the receivers that I oversee, but with working with GLaDOS and working through this network, I basically have access to these thousands of receivers should my fish move into those areas. So we haven't seen any transit outside of the Great Lakes Basin yet. The only thing that would maybe come close to what you're talking about is we've actually watched one lake trout leave Lake Erie through the Welland Canal and travel into Lake Ontario. And apparently just this week, my collaborator over in Ohio DNR, Matt Faust, so they had a fish that actually looked like it went over Niagara Falls and was caught below the falls and returned. Definitely giving us insight into the distribution patterns of these fish that we certainly never would have been able to determine by other means.
So such large movements that some of these fish are exhibiting, why is it important for researchers to work together like in GLaDOS and agree on sharing the information and utilizing the same techniques or the same brands of telemetry products?
So there's two really important things there. The first one would be the large movement, you know, the large scale movements and why they're important. And the other one is the sharing of data like you referenced. So with respect to the first one, in the Great Lakes, a lot of the species are managed with quota levels, you know, to make sure that sustainable harvest levels are achieved, you know, for the long-term sustainability of these stocks. I think about Lake Whitefish in Lake Michigan, Lake Huron. I think about walleye and yellow perch in Lake Erie. In the case of Lake Erie, walleye quotas are actually apportioned to different management agencies, and it's based on the area of water they have jurisdiction on. Well, there's also then non-quota areas. And so what the biologists and researchers need to know is what fraction of these stocks are migrating out of the quota management area. Because if a fish migrates out of a quota management area, it's essentially going into another area where regulations may be more lax or may not be designed to promote sustainable harvest. So if, you know, a walleye from Lake Erie migrates up the Huron-Erie corridor through the Detroit River and up into Lake Huron, that fish now is in a completely different jurisdiction with different harvest regulations. So the Lake Erie managers want to know what fraction of their fish are migrating out of the quota management zone, and then how do we incorporate that information into the stock assessment models. Another thing they're looking at, you know, with respect to, you know, where fish are moving are, you know, in Lake Erie, we generally have fish that spawn in the eastern basin and in the western basin. Well, what's the exchange rate between those stocks? How do we make sure that the harvest regulations are appropriate given the movement patterns of these different stocks, because each of the stocks, right, has different population dynamics, different mortality rates, different growth rates, and things of that nature. So that's really how this information is currently kind of being set up to be used and incorporated into the stock assessment programs. The other one you talked about was kind of the data sharing. And I've got to say, this has really been an interesting endeavor. Now, anytime you get a bunch of scientists in a room and you have data at stake, you know, you kind of revert back to kindergarten and everybody's like, yeah, mine. Well, what's been really just really excellent and really a pleasure to be a part of is the fact that, you know, we're all collaborating on these projects. So when I tag my fish and it shows up on somebody else's receiver, that data is basically mine, right? I know the information that's associated with my fish and my transmitter number. And then vice versa. If I get a bunch of tags that show up that I'm not familiar with, I really don't know what that fish is, but I can I upload that data, and another researcher now, when he or she goes to pull their information off, they get all that information. So it's really collaborative, and really everybody's kind of understood the value of working collaboratively at this scale to kind of address the research questions that we're all working on. You know, it's really been a great experience. You know, at first when we got into it, we were like, okay, what can we expect here? But it's been really overwhelming how it's worked so seamlessly among academic and management folks from both Canada and the United States. It's really been a great experience.
Before you guys had this system, if you were to detect some other numbers you didn't know, you would have to call up Vemco or the other company you're using and tell them the number, and then they would tell you who bought the tag, correct?
Right. It's exactly right. And then they would say, well, can you send me that data? And then I would have to go in and pull out, you know, their tag number and all their information on that one receiver. And, you know, the way this works basically is like this. So we maintain about 150 receivers in Lake Erie. We go out every summer, we download the data, we change the batteries, we put them back down. Well, when I get back to the office, I just upload all of my receivers to the database online. And then our data management person, Nancy Nate, who's stationed up in Hammond Bay, she runs the data through the filters, the necessary filters. And then researcher can pull down a detection summary, and they get all their detection in a file that they then can go and do their analysis with.
Just to further prove how much easier your system makes it rather than the old days, throughout this whole program, you guys have had 375.8 million different detections on those 10,000 fish you've tagged. And if you just divide that by the number of fish, you get about 35,300 pings for each one of those fish that you have tagged. So that's why this system that you guys have is so much easier than having to copy all that data down and send it via email after going through the tag manufacturer to figure out whose fish this really is.
And the nice thing too is that, you know, we have some false detection filters that, you know, we can run, you know, through GLaDOS, because with acoustic telemetry, they're, you know, having false detections and dealing with them is just part of the game. And so, you know, that's the power of it. Kind of interesting is, you know, on Twitter, I kind of keep track of other tracking organizations and groups, you know, across the world. And, you know, a lot of them have a lot of really good collaborations. But from time to time, what you'll see is like, oh, hey, we found these tag codes. If they belong to you, you know, let us know, or things like that. And with the way our system works, there's not a whole lot of having to track people down. Now, granted, those other systems are a lot different than ours, because you have a lot of different countries. You have a way larger geographic expanse and so forth. But when Chuck Kruger, the director of GLaDOS, set this up initially, he went to a lot of those different tagging groups, the Ocean Tracking Network up in Canada, and then there's a couple in Australia. And he kind of like learned from them and said, hey, what are some of the things that we need to be thinking about? And so those interactions really helped set up the program that we have going on here on the Great Lakes. And it's amazing how many frustrations we don't have to deal with. If you could just sit and imagine having to deal with all these things on your own. Basically, what it works is I've got my code set up, you know, in R. So when I pull my detections for a project down, I just simply put in the new path name, and I can run all my summaries, you know, fairly quickly. And then the other thing that kind of GLaDOS has been working on is what they call this GLaDOS R package. And it really what it is, it's a set of different programs that can help researchers, you know, visualize their data, you know, kind of making some animations of fish moving across a study area. I posted, I think, a video that some of our collaborators out east put together, Jason Robinson, in New York State Department of Environmental Conservation put together, and showing, you know, a walleye moving from the western basin of Lake Erie into the eastern basin. So that's one of the packages, I believe, you know, that's through the GLaDOS R package, where it helps researchers visualize their data and, you know, summarize all these detections, because it's a huge endeavor. I mean, like you mentioned, there's like millions of detections, and putting them together in some coherent fashion and some coherent manner to, you know, get an idea of what the fish are doing and when they're doing it is a daunting task. And so we've been trying to kind of, I guess, give back to the telemetry community, because we've learned a lot from other groups, and that GLaDOS package represents some of that. You know, how do you visualize your data and things like that? We're always looking for collaborations and ideas from other people. So if you have them, you know, please don't hesitate to contact us through the GLaDOS website, because, you know, we're always looking for feedback on some of that stuff.
And if there's any researchers interested in your R package, are they able to get that from the GLaDOS website?
It's on, GitHub? I think it's on the OTN, the Ocean Tracking Network GitHub. You should be able to search GLaDOS R package, and it should come up.
Well, Chris, we don't have any non-fisheries person to challenge you this week, so I guess you will remain the telemetry expert. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly, the more you get into this, the more you realize, wow, there's a lot to understand. One of the things that GLaDOS has tried to do is take what we've learned and make it transferable to other researchers, because we've made a lot of mistakes along the way. And so that's really the intent of what the organization has been trying to do, is, you know, provide a mechanism for others to, you know, have a lower learning curve than we did. And so hopefully, you know, our experiences are beneficial for others doing similar type work wherever they might be.
Now we are down to the final five questions, and then I'll let you get back to your important business. So this is a group of questions that I ask each one of the expert guests to come on the show. And we start real simple. What is your favorite fish?
5 years ago, I probably would have said walleye, but I've been more involved lately in the last few years with cold water species. And I'm thinking I got to start leaning to burbot. They're a very cool and elusive fish, and they've definitely moved up the rank on my cool level. So I'll go with burbot.
And then what is your favorite memory from your career thus far?
Hands down, working collaboratively with researchers from Canada and the United States. Fish know no boundaries, especially when you're working up here in the Great Lakes. And so developing the relationships and the partners with the different academic and resource agencies has been a highlight of my career, and never would have thought I would have been as involved with it as I have. And it makes it worth getting up in the morning.
Perhaps you're already in it, but what is your dream job or dream location to work in?
Kind of everybody likes to disparage Lake Erie from time to time because it catches on fire and, you know, ooh, the blue-green algaes. But when you work here, you realize Lake Erie is pretty darn impressive. I mean, the number of fish this lake is able to produce, I think somebody, I've seen statistics where it outproduces all the other Great Lakes combined. I'd say I'm probably there working on Lake Erie. It's hard to compete with the beauty of the natural landscape of, you know, the upper lakes like Lake Superior and whatnot. But in terms of a fishery biologist dream, in terms of interacting with stakeholders and the resource, this is pretty good in my book.
If money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
I would love to know definitively why fish, and in this case walleye, make the choice to migrate even when the physical conditions don't necessarily say they need to. Really elucidating the mechanisms that cause fish to migrate is, and I don't know how you would do it, but that if money were an object, that would be something that I would like to get my head around.
And if there is one point or one principle that you could have programmed into everybody's head, what would it be?
Never forget who you're working for. So sometimes when we work as scientists and biologists, we think we're doing it for science. But the reality of it is, if nobody was out there utilizing the resource and being dependent upon us, very few of us would have jobs. So I've grown up I was a co-op unit kid through in my master's degree. I've worked very closely in Minnesota and in Ohio with management agencies, and I continue to do so. I think that's the one thing I hope to convey to other people is remember who we're doing this for. It's for the people who utilize the resource, either directly or indirectly.
Great answers, Chris. And thank you for coming on the show today and giving some great answers to my questions. I'm sure the listeners enjoy your story. And I'm sure with 68 different projects going on in the system, we could do some more episodes in the future on some of those individual projects.
I'm sure we could put you into contact with individual researchers very easily. I know every one of them would love to share their study results.
And if anyone in the audience has any questions or are interested in learning more, how can they get a hold of you or how could they do that?
You could either email me directly, cvandergoot@usgs.gov, or through my Twitter page, Erie Fish Doc. Kind of a cheesy handle. Came up with it at a conference a couple of years ago, but I guess it sticks with me. Be more than happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
GLaDOS also has a Twitter, @GLaDOS_fish. Or the website, www.glados.glos.us. And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter @FisheriesPod, on Facebook @facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope you enjoyed the fourth episode. Tune in next week when I'll have Geoffrey Day on to talk about the Sea Run Brook Trout Coalition. I'm excited to hear about it as I have zero knowledge on Sea Run Brook Trout. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the fourth episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, you're doing science for the stakeholders and not just for the sake of doing science.